Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the cause of disease when we come back. The lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my 2-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. This class includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the scene of the alleged crime, and what you should say to the police or investigators, and what you ought not to say to the police. And you'll learn how to conduct yourself in your case at bail setting, arraignment, pleadings, and motion hearings, trial and appeal. And you'll learn how to ask questions, cross-examine adverse witnesses, select a jury, introduce exhibits and evidence, conduct discovery, do legal research, and follow the rules of court. There are 28 elements, 28 things that we need to learn in courtroom strategy and procedure, and rule one is that all of the evidence that your opponent is ever going to use against you is going to be furnished by you. So keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything, and then shut up. If you can get rule one out of the way, we can get to the real business of winning your case. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about disease, particularly colon disease. In fact, we found out last time that colon disease kills more people than AIDS, kills more people than prostate cancer, kills more people than breast cancer. And we have a month, October, which is set aside every year here in the United States. It's called Breast Cancer Awareness Month. We don't have a colon awareness month or a colon cancer awareness month, and that's because the colon isn't nearly as sexy as the breast. Well, so says Dr. Schultz. That's his conclusion. That medicine is chic. Medicine is after customers, and the customers don't want to talk about your dirty, filthy colon. They want to talk about your breasts or your prostate or your penis or something that's sexy, something that's got some appeal to it, something that's kind of fits in, you know, with the times. And prostate cancer is one of those. AIDS and AIDS research and marching on cancer, or running or biking or hiking or doing something to raise money for research. Or like Jerry Lewis, you know, he gets on every Labor Day and he gets on the Labor Day telethon to raise money for muscular dystrophy. Okay, with all of that out of the way, this colon cancer kills more people silently. Nobody pays attention to it. But if you were just concerned about the number of people being killed every year from colon cancer, it's more people than died in the Vietnam War in 10 years die every year from just that one form of cancer. It's pretty serious. But it's worse than just cancer. In fact, these three key naturopathic doctors, I'll give you their names again. It's Norman Walker, who wrote the book on colon health, and Tissue Cleansing Through Bowel Management by Bernard Jensen. And in the book that we're reviewing from Schultz, it's Bowel, Cleanse and Heal Your Body. And it's about the colon. It's about your bowels, your guts, as we call it, you know, down at the Blue Room. These three believe that it's 80 or 90% of all diseases, of which there's 450 symptoms, 450 diseases that we see here in the desk reference. So that when you get a pain in your abdomen, you say, well, I've got this stomach ache. No, your stomach is up under your rib cage. Kids, your stomach isn't down here around your belly button. That's your colon. So when you've got this gut ache down here in your abdomen, down around your belly button, that's your colon. And it's plugged up with about 6 to 10 pounds of fecal matter that you carry around with you and have been carrying around with you for the last 10, 20, or 30 years. Did you know that? And it's pasted to the inner core of your colon. I mean, it's pasted on there like tar. And you can't assimilate, you can't absorb nutrients through that tar. Now, you're also a host of parasites. Hulda Clark said that she had never seen a case of cancer without parasites. Now, that doesn't mean that the parasites cause the cancer, but it means that when you have parasites, cancer is present. Because the parasites live in a cancer environment. Now, we all have cancer cells from time to time, and our natural immune system disposes of them until the immune system becomes overwhelmed. And one of the ways that we overwhelm our immune system is by just cutting out chunks of it. For instance, when you ladies have a radical mastectomy, they will cut out your lymph nodes under your arms. Though that lymph system over there is a very important part of your immune system. And then when you have an appendicitis, they cut your appendix off. We don't try to cure it or heal it or deal with an appendicitis. We cut it off. In fact, the solution to appendicitis is operation. The only solution that I ever heard in my lifetime until I read this book was cut it out. And then when I was a kid, they just routinely cut out your tonsils and adenoids. I don't know how I missed that. I guess it was my old granny. My old granny said that if God didn't want it there, he wouldn't have put it there. If God had intended for you to have vaccinations, he would have made you with a needle sticking out of your arm so they could just hook up the hypodermic to the needle. I mean, my old granny, you know, she looked around, she said, you know, there's got to be a reason for that. Now, in her old age, she had her appendix cut out. Well, she had an appendicitis, and somebody said, well, what you got to do is cut your appendix out. It's the only solution. We're going to find out today that there's another solution. In fact, people have been having appendicitis for thousands of years. And before we learned how to do surgery, we had to deal with that appendicitis, and we dealt with it very successfully, surprisingly. Just because you have an appendicitis doesn't mean that you're going to die. It means that you're in excruciating pain and that you need to do something about that. In fact, it would be better if you didn't screw up your appendix to start with. So your appendix then has purpose. And the medical doctors, this is what when I went to school, they told us, well, that's just an old vestigial organ that doesn't have any meaning anymore. It's a part of evolution. And then you've evolved out of your need for it. And the reason they said that is because they didn't have a clue as to what it did or what it was for. And so they saw it there. You know, they'd cut open a dead body and they'd look inside and they'd say, look at that thing. Well, we don't know what it is, so therefore it must be vestigial. And it's true, you can live without it. You can cut it off and you can live without it. You can take an automobile and you can take the trunk lid off and it'll drive down the road. You can take the hood off. It'll still do. You can take the headlights out and the taillights out. You can take the back seat out, and it'll still run. It'll still drive down the road. But it's not nearly as good. And each time you take off one of these pieces or one of these parts, you impair the whole to some degree. So let's take a look at how we impair the whole. For your education, I'd like to set this issue straight. Do you need your appendix? Well, who am I to judge God and nature? Obviously, everything in your body, every part, every organ, every cell is necessary or it simply wouldn't be there. But we hear this time and time again from some godless, ignorant medical doctor, this organ has no use. Or, this is a vestigial organ left over from when we lived with dinosaurs and we don't need it anymore. Well, if this theory of evolution was true, and we did live with dinosaurs, then wouldn't we have evolved, eliminated, or grown out of any unnecessary organs and systems in our body? Why would it even be there? Now, if there is one organ of your body that I've heard more ignorant medical doctors make this statement about, more than any other, it is definitely your appendix. Now, for your education and for the medical doctor's education, I'd like to set the issue straight. Just open up any standard medical immune text, and it will clearly tell you that the appendix is a lymphoid aggregation. Lymphoid aggregation. Does this sound familiar? Well, yes, this is exactly the same as the tonsils. So, you could call the appendix the tonsils of the bowel. And as we know, any lymphoid aggression or aggregation is a mass of lymph tissue loaded with white blood cells perfectly placed in an area to warn our immune system of invasion by bacteria, virus, fungus, and other harmful microorganisms. And it is also the military base for immune cells to fight off any invasion. When your appendix swells and is painful, exactly like your tonsils, they swell and they become painful. It is telling us that there is an invasion of harmful bacteria and that our immune system is excreting white blood cells. These white blood cells are defending us, and we wouldn't want to cut off our appendix any more than we would want to cut off our tonsils. In fact, immunology textbooks also tell us that once you get an appendectomy, the rest of your immune system doesn't work well, especially your spleen. Now, the spleen is a major component of our immune system and one of the major reservoirs for our white blood cells. So, let me quote from the medical books. They tell us, the spleen's regeneration of lymphatic immune follicles and white blood cells after an attack by harmful microorganisms is dependent on the presence of the appendix. And the spleen's potential to form antibodies is also dependent upon the presence of the appendix. The appendix contributes to the recovery of the spleen's antibody-forming capacity by the production of antibody-forming cell precursors. Now, that's a mouthful, but what it's telling us here is that your appendix and spleen work in harmony together. And I had a student here one time, he had an injury and he had his spleen removed. And from that point on, his life was downhill. His health went downhill from that point on. And then I haven't heard from him, so my presumption is he's probably died by now. Probably from that spleen operation. Now, you can live without your spleen, at least for a while. You can live without your appendix, at least, you know, for a while. Now, if you have your tonsils removed, when you get cancer, it will be above your waistline. If you have your appendix removed, your cancer will be below your waistline. Now, just tuck that one away in your heart. Got that from Holden Clark also. So now, these two organs, your tonsils and your appendix, are a part and parcel with your immune system, and it's your immune system that defends against cancer. It's not chemotherapy. Your body is not short of chemicals. Your body isn't crying out, you know, for some toxic chemical that you're going to get from Merck or Pfizer over here, and you've got this chemical deficiency. That's not your problem. It is true that those chemicals will kill those tumors, and that's the goal of modern medicine, is to kill those tumors. And it's the killing of the tumor, especially when it's too big, that kills you, because your body cannot dispose of that mass. It can't break it down, digest it, and run it through your liver and then out through your bowel. And especially if your bowel is plugged up, like that famous potato up the tailpipe. Now, he says, I could go on for hours about the pages and pages written about the function and necessity of the appendix in the maintenance of your health and having a functional, strong immune system, but I believe I've made my point. Now, doctors know this. You know, doctors go to school, and doctors, medical doctors, they know that what your spleen does. They know what your appendix does. They know what your tonsils do. They know what the gallbladder is for, and they routinely amputate these organs out of your body without telling you what the downside effect of that is going to be. It may be simple and routine for the doctor to remove your appendix, but life after your appendix is removed is not simple and routine. It may be easy for the doctor to remove your gallbladder, but once your gallbladder is removed, your life will never be the same again. And it's true, the doctor can remove your colon and paste a bag onto your abdomen wall, but your life will never be the same again. So you might want to think about that, you know, before you get cut happy and cut it out. Because once it's cut out, boys and girls, it's gone forever. And then it's not going to regenerate, and it's not going to grow a new one. You're going to die without it. So just what is this thing that we call the appendix? What is an appendicitis? Well, the appendix is right below your ileocecal valve, the entrance to the large intestine. Here's the perfect placement to detect any pathogen or microorganism that may be harmful to you. As food enters the final stage of digestion before elimination, if the appendix detects anything harmful, it will become inflamed, much like your tonsils, and it will go on the offensive to kill the pathogen before it can be digested and circulate into your bloodstream. This is one of the ways that you can get appendicitis, and it's actually your body protecting you. It's not malfunctioning, as some medical experts are wont to tell you, just before they cut it off. It's actually protecting you when it's inflamed, because now it's going into operation, and it's warning you that you've got a problem. Now, the other more common way that you can get appendicitis is from backed up fecal sludge in your large intestine. See, the appendix is located at the base of your ascending colon. This is the biggest anti-gravity and uphill trek for your digested food. Your appendix will actually excrete fluids to lubricate food and stimulate peristalsis. That is the muscular contractions of the colon that move everything along. But if there are pounds of excess fecal matter sitting on top of your appendix, it can't do that very well. So, and if your peristalsis is weak, then the feces just sits there festering, becoming toxic until the appendix swells. Then it gets sick, and if it's left unattended long enough, it will burst. Now, I've worked with a lot of people with appendicitis, and I had one rule in my clinic. Nobody goes to the hospital. And I had a record, I had a second rule in my clinic, that nobody goes to the hospital. And then I had a third rule in my clinic, and that is nobody goes to the hospital. Now that we've established this simple first rule, we can go on to the Dr. Schultz appendicitis remedy. Step one when you have an appendicitis is don't put anything in your mouth. Don't stop eating immediately. You're already stuffed. You're so stuffed that your feces is sitting on top of it, and even inside of your appendix. So stop eating. Number two, get the garbage out fast. You need an enema. You've got to get that stuff out and give your appendix some relief. Now, that appendicitis is exacerbated by constipation. You need to get the feces out of your colon to take the pressure off of the appendix. Now, natural healing is very simple. It's always just a matter of stopping whatever it is that you're doing that's hurting you, and then starting whatever it is you need to do to help you. So if you're stuffed and so much that your feces or fecal matter is pushing into your appendix, stop stuffing and start eliminating. Dr. Christopher used to say that he gave so many enemas that one day he knocked on the door of one of his patients and they yelled out, "Friend or enema?" Well, basically, you want to get your bowel cleaned out quick, and you want all of that fecal matter out of that bowel, all the way up to the descending colon, across the transverse, and down the ascending colon, all the way to the cecum. You might even be able to get some of that fecal matter out of your appendix. It would take an hour or two working to get that bowel clean. Now, once you've done your enema, you want to consume lots of water and fresh juices. Start drowning yourself with fluid and flush your system out. You might have a little fever, too, so it's important that you stay hydrated. You need these liquids. Now, step three, the next thing is to take intestinal formula number one. It'll take about 8 to 10 hours before you see the results of it, but take it anyway. Take it with some prune juice, that's right, prune juice, or any other juice that will make you go to the bathroom. That would be the next thing to do. Now, once the initial attack is over, I'd recommend doing my entire 5-day bowel detox and also taking some or making some changes to your food program. But first things first. Step four. Now, you don't want to put your elbow right on the appendix and go for the gold, but you do want to start some movement. The appendix is plugged up. That's what's causing the pain. So start some massage down by the iliac crest of the pelvis and work your way up, moving along the path of the large intestine, applying as much pressure as you can stand. Also, get in the shower and do some hot and cold therapy right over the appendix where it hurts, because this helps break up and move the congestion out of your appendix. Simply alternate with 15 seconds of hot water and 15 seconds of cold water. Do it about 7, 8, 9 times. That's 7 hots and 7 colds. Now, these simple things always got my patients over their appendicitis attack. I've had calls where I wasn't able to be there, and from all around the country, and I've told people to do this exact same routine, and they got their children, their grandparents, and everybody through their appendicitis. So it's not too difficult. And I have never, ever seen or heard of anybody's appendix blowing out or blowing up or bursting from doing this routine. They always got better. How soon? 3 hours in some cases. 3 days and others. It all depends on how sick you are and how fast you can get the fecal matter out of your bowel, out of your colon. It depends on what you've been doing. Remember, the key is to stop what is making you sick and then start doing that which will assist your body in healing itself. So there's the appendicitis story. Now remember, disease primarily is a deficiency. Primarily. Listen to this. A vitaminosis is any disease caused by chronic or long-term vitamin deficiency or is caused by a deficit or defect in metabolic or metabolic conversion, such as tryptophan to niacin. They're designated by the same letter as the vitamin A, A vitaminosis, and they include... And there's a list of them here, about 7 or 8. Listen to this. Vitamin A deficiency causes night blindness. Very simple then. If you've got night blindness, we start taking vitamin A and it goes away. It's caused by a deficiency. And going in for surgery or going in for chemicals and drugs isn't going to solve your problem. Even if it can solve the problem temporarily, it never gets to the root cause of what's causing the night blindness, and it's vitamin A deficiency. So wearing glasses isn't the solution. You know, a lot of people, they go to the optometrist and he says, "Oh my God, you can't see very good." I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll make you a pair of glasses. Well, why is it that you can't see? Now, my old granddad Snyder was 92 when he died, and he didn't wear glasses. I don't know how well he could see, but I do know he never wore glasses. He was born in 1855. He died in 1947. Never wore glasses. He died at age 92, of old age. He just went to bed one night and didn't wake up. Now that's the way to go. And he was in perfect health. Now he did walk with a cane. He was old and full of years. And then he had a cane. I don't know if he needed it or not. He walked pretty slow. I can remember him walking, you know, in the house. He wasn't nimble. He wasn't, you know, doing handstands and cartwheels. But, you know, for 92, I think he was doing pretty well. Now, I saw him when he was 90. I didn't see him when he was 92, but he was 90 years old. And he had his appendix, and he had his tonsils, and, you know, he'd lived a full life. And he'd lived a very healthy life. Now, back in those days, from 1855 to 1950, we were not bombarded by McDonald's burgers and Wendy's and Burger King. We weren't bombarded, you know, by all these fast foods and foodless foods and devitalized foods and chemical farming. I mean, he had good food and lived his life. Now, today we have air pollution, water pollution, bad food, poisons in our environment, especially in our water supply. You know, you got poison in your water, and you bathe in that water, you're absorbing it constantly. Let's take a look at thiamine. Thiamine deficiency causes beriberi. Niacin deficiency causes pellagra. Vitamin B12 deficiency causes megaloblastic anemia. Vitamin C deficiency causes scurvy. Vitamin D deficiency causes rickets. Vitamin K deficiency causes bleeding. You know, hemophiliacs have a vitamin K deficiency that their body doesn't make it. There may be some other cause, you know, in addition to the vitamin K deficiency. But here's what happens when you're circumcised on the eighth day. Just happens that we're instructed in the Bible to circumcise our male children on the eighth day. Not the sixth day, not the tenth day, not the day after they're born, not when they're 2 or 3 or 9 years old. It's on the eighth day. Now, it just so happens that the highest concentration, the highest manufacture of vitamin K in your lifetime is going to come on the eighth day of your life. Your body is going to make more vitamin K based upon your body weight than at any time in your life. Now, isn't that just special? So that when you circumcise this baby, he doesn't bleed to death. All right, so that tells us a little bit about that story. Now let's take a look at one more over here. It's called the gallbladder, if I can find it over here. I think I can. The gallbladder is routinely, constantly, we go to the doctor, you know, we got a stomach ache or something like that. My first wife had a gallbladder problem. And she had this pain in her stomach. Actually, it wasn't in her stomach, it was in her guts. She went to the doctor and they said, "Well, listen, lady, you've got gallstones." "Well, what's the solution for gallstones?" And they said, "Well, we're going to take your gallbladder out." Now, I'm not quite sure why you can't open the gallbladder, take out the stones, and then sew the gallbladder back up and leave it there. But for some reason, I guess they can't. And so they just cut the whole gallbladder off. And you can live without it. Hell, that was 30 years ago, and she's still alive. But she doesn't live as well. And I told her at the time, I said, "You know, that cutting your guts out, it just doesn't sit right with me. I just didn't care too much for the idea, you know, that we're going to cut a part of your body off." I said, "Something caused those gallstones. I don't know what caused them, but something did. Why don't you get 2 or 3 opinions first? Why don't you go talk to a couple other doctors and see if there's some other treatment, some other modality that you can use so that you don't cut that out?" Now, her mother was a nurse, and she worked in a big city hospital all of her life. You know, she was one of the shift workers, and she used to work the swing shift. I can remember, you know, when I was courting that girl, her mama would go to the hospital, go to work 3:30, you know, in the afternoon. And she'd work till 11 at night, and then she'd come home, and, you know, and she'd just, you know, regular medical doctor nurse. And so she went and talked to her mama, and her mama said, "Well, that's crazy. What do you mean, go get a second or third opinion? The doctor looked at you. He said, you got gallstones. You got to have your gallbladder removed. We do it every day. Now, you know, when you're a shift worker and you're doing something day in and day out, something is routine, there's about 800,000 of these gallbladder attacks every year in the United States, and about 500,000 of those, you know, they end up being removed by surgery. So it's pretty common. Goes on every day. And so my wife, she went in, she had her gallbladder removed, just like her mama told her to. And then there's some side effects that come from that. Side effects. Let me give you a reminder here, and we'll take a look at the side effects from gallbladder surgery when we come back. Meanwhile, back on the farm here, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information about that program, please go to our homeschooling page on the website. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. Now, The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. And we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. But these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now that satisfies the FCC in about 80 countries around the world. Now let's take a look here at gallbladder surgery or removing. Let's take a look at some information about gallstones, because it's something that affects somewhere around 18 million people here in the United States, and maybe even as many as one out of every 12 people. And yet most people don't know that they have them. They don't know that they have gallstones. And by the way, if you have gallstones, did you know that you can pass those? Now, you can get these stones in your kidneys. These are called kidney stones. Or bladder stones, and then you can get them in your gallbladder, and it's called gallstones. They plug up your liver. You can melt those out, and you can pass those. You can get rid of them. Now, according to the National Institutes of Health, that's the NIH, pain from gallstones results in about 800,000 hospitalizations and more than 500,000 operations every year here in the United States. I'm going to guess at those 500,000 operations to see if the machine will do this. 500,000 times about $5,000 each. Well, it's about $2.5 billion a year worth of operations at $5,000 a piece. Now, he goes on to say here, 500,000 operations a year here in the United States. Now, unfortunately, the NIH doesn't give people a lot of information about how to actually avoid these gallbladder problems. And it's also critical to recognize that the gallbladder has an important function in your digestion. And if you have just removed it, which is, by the way, quite the barbaric thing to do, you are now compromising your digestive health for the rest of your life. And surgeons who remove gallbladders are complacent in educating patients about nutritional changes that these patients will need to make in order to lose this important digestive organ and continue with life. For example, you're not going to get the same quality of digestion that you would have had if your gallbladder were in place. And you're not going to get the excretion of the bile from the gallbladder into your small intestine. And as a result, you're not going to efficiently digest foods that are moving through your digestive tract. And this is especially true for dietary fats, including essential fatty acids. Now, these essential fatty acids are a part of those 92 essential vitamins, minerals, and essential fatty acids that you have to have for life. There's 92 of those. So this gallbladder over here isn't something to be flip about and say, well, you know, I've got gallstones, so let's just cut them out. Without a gallbladder, you're not going to be able to digest dietary fats with any degree of efficiency. This means that if you don't take bile salts as a nutritional supplement every time you eat healthy fats, you're going to miss out on all of the important omega-3 fatty acids and other healthful oils. That's why people who have had gallbladder removal surgery usually suffer the classic signs of EFA deficiencies. That is, poor nervous system function, irritability, learning difficulties, heart disease, poor blood sugar control, and so on. That poor blood sugar control translates into diabetes. Now, doctors and surgeons flat out aren't telling their patients this all-important information. I contend that it's downright criminal, if you ask me. This basic education should be required by law. It's just flat out evil to remove an essential organ from a patient's body and then neglect to tell that patient about the long-term adjustments that they need to make in order to compensate for that missing organ. And you know why surgeons don't tell people the truth about gallbladder removal surgery, and I suspect it's because if people knew the horrifying nutritional consequences that that procedure is going to produce in their bodies, they would refuse to do it, and the doctors would miss out on their fees. Again, I got to interject here. I would concur with that. My guesstimate would be this. I'll tell you a little story here. My first wife was having our fifth child, and it was a little early, and so she went to the hospital where she'd planned to have the baby, and we'd made all these plans and preparations. You know, we were prepared for it. She'd been pregnant, you know, for several months before this event transpired, so we were clued in to the fact that she was going to have this baby. But it was about 3 weeks early, see, and so she went to the hospital. Well, I got a call down at the office one day, and somebody said, your wife is in the hospital. And I thought, well, that's kind of strange. This is a little early. We hadn't planned on. I went on down to the hospital and walked in, and I said, hey, my name is George Gordon, and I'd like to see my wife. And so she said, well, this is the nurse, you know, downstairs in the office. She said, well, your wife is up in room so-and-so, you know, on the third floor. And So there's the elevator over there, and so I went over to the elevator and got in. And as soon as the elevator door opened on the third floor, standing right in front of the elevator was this doctor. And I thought, you know, he's probably trying to get onto the elevator, and so I smiled and said, howdy. And so he said, are you Mr. Gordon? Now, think about that. Are you Mr. Gordon? Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I am. But how did he know that I was on that elevator? So the nurse downstairs had to have called him up there on the third floor and said, Mr. Gordon's on his way up. So, you know, the lawyer that I am, you know, I thought to myself right away, well, that's kind of strange that this guy knows my name. He asks me, as I'm the only guy on the elevator, you know, he says, are you Mr. Gordon? As soon as I said, well, yes, I am. And he said, oh, Mr. Gordon, and he had these papers in his hand. He said, we need you to sign these forms. Your wife is in labor. And she's about to have this baby, but the baby is too big, and she's going to need a cesarean. Now, boys and girls, we'd already had four babies and three or four miscarriages. My wife did not have a problem getting them out. She had a problem keeping them in. So I wasn't surprised that she was in the hospital with this baby that maybe is going to be born premature. But now the doctor says, now get this sales pitch here. He says, your wife is in labor. That means she's going to have a baby. Isn't it? Isn't that what that means, girls? And when you're in labor, you're going to have a baby. But this baby is so big that she can't have it naturally. So she's already had four. I mean, it isn't like a first calf heifer, you know, that we're going to have to pull. This cow's been through this, you know, four or five times. And besides that, my wife wasn't a little woman either. You know, she's a pretty good sized cow. Pretty good size old heifer. And so I didn't, you know, being an old cattleman and all, I didn't see any reason why we're going to need to pull this calf. Now he tells me we got to have this cesarean. Now these cesareans, if you want to know, back in 1950 were very, very rare. Now this is 1982. And these cesareans back in 1950 really got a jump start with a lady was a television star. It was Lucille Ball. And she was pregnant while she was doing her comedy series. And she needed to get this baby born during the week so that she could continue on, you know, with her television series. And so they planned a cesarean in order to have the baby born on a Wednesday so that, you know, she wouldn't interrupt her schedule. Now, you know, if you got lots of money and you don't care much about surgery, I guess, you know, a cesarean. I wouldn't say that you should never have a cesarean, but, you know, God did not design you, ladies, you know, for cesarean sections. He designed you for natural childbirth. If you want to see how that works, go back to Exodus chapter 1. And if you're, you know, practicing the biblical dietary laws and a little common sense over here, you shouldn't have any problem having babies. That's not a medical emergency. That's a normal bodily function. You know, like urination and defecation, you know, and having babies. Sneezing and blowing your nose. Those are body functions. You know, they work pretty well. You know, you don't really have a medical emergency, you know, every time you sneeze, do you? So, anyway, the doctor was pitching this cesarean to me, and it was a chic thing to do. I mean, you know, women today, in fact, one-third of all babies born here in the United States are done by cesarean. Now, at the time this thing was going on, childbirth back in 1982, if I remember this right now, I think it was $600. And the cesarean was $5,000. Now, just put yourself in the position of this doctor over here. And, you know, given the normal pressures of everyday life, you know, you and I and everybody else, you know, we got the power bill to pay and the telephone bill, and most likely you've got a mortgage payment and a car payment and, you know, a few payments to make. Doctors are just like all the rest of us, you know, they got payments to make.
And you got this lady in here, and she's scheduled for childbirth. You know, we knew about this baby was coming for a long time, several months at least. And you're going to get $600. Now, this lady comes in a little early, 3 weeks. And here's an opportunity, you know, if you could sell, if you could persuade this woman, persuade her husband, yeah, go ahead with this cesarean, you could get $5,000, about 10 times more. Now, you know, if you're a plumber, and you're out here working on a job, you know, and if you could get this guy to replumb his whole house, you know, that's a lot better than just fixing a leaky pipe. So, you know, if I told you, I said, well, you know, you've got this leaky pipe over here, and it's plugged up, and so I give him take the pipes out, and I show him a cross-section that's pretty near plugged up, and I tell him, you know, all the pipes in your house are like this. And, you know, you really need to replumb this, and I'd suggest that we put in all new copper pipes, you know, so this doesn't happen again, you know, copper being about the most expensive thing you can buy. Has the biggest markup, and it's a lot more profitable than plastic. And so, you know, depending upon the guy, you know, if I was over at this doctor's house, I'd be pitching him to replumb his whole house rather than fix a leaky pipe. And of course, when I'm in the hospital, he's pitching me for a cesarean section rather than natural childbirth. I mean, it's just one salesman dealing with another one. Now, of course, you know, if you got your wits about you, your house has been working all right and your water's been working all right, it's just that we got this leaky pipe over here. I'd like you to fix this leaky pipe for $50 or $75, Mr. Plumber. So anyway, the doctor, you know, he's pitching me for this cesarean, and I said, well, no, I don't think we'll have a cesarean. She shouldn't have any problem having this baby. Can I go in and see her? And he says, oh, no, she's unconscious. She's out. She's under sedation. And boy, that really struck me strange. I said, well, have you talked to her about this cesarean? He says, well, no, this is a medical emergency. Are you following this along, boys and girls? I step off the elevator. He addresses me by name. He's expecting me. He's got the papers right in his hand, and he's putting the high-pressure sale on me. This is a medical emergency. Your wife is under sedation, and we, you know, she checked herself in here, and we got to do a cesarean. And I said, well, don't you think we ought to wait until she wakes up, and don't you think we ought to consult her? Now, ladies, I don't know, you probably trust your husband, you know. He's probably a pretty nice guy. But, you know, before somebody, you know, gets knife happy and starts cutting you open, don't you think that you ought to be consulted first? I mean, this is not kind of like, you know, this isn't like she just had an auto accident and she was thrown from the car 150 feet and she's in critical condition and we need this emergency operation. You know, this is, you know, in a case like that, I might defer to the doctor and say, well, doc, you know more about it than I do. You know, she's just been through a hell of an accident over here, and so, you know, do what you can to save her, you know. I'll just trust you. No, this is a childbirth. You know, this is something we've been planning for several months. This woman has had 4 babies before this one. You know, she's a good-sized woman. She's not never had a problem before. And now this doctor wants to do a cesarean, and she's 42 years old. You know, she probably isn't going to have any more children after this one, but, you know, it impairs future childbirth, and it also is going to impair this woman for the rest of her life. You know, just cutting your body open, you know, is a lot of stress. I just thought that we ought to ask her first. You know, just be blunt about it. I just thought that before I told somebody, yeah, go ahead and cut it out, maybe I ought to ask her. And so I said to him, well, no, let's wait until she wakes up and let's talk to her and ask her what she thinks about this cesarean thing. And so he really put the high pressure on me. He came after me. Now, he's gonna put the closing question in here, and he says, you know, in a medical emergency like this, we can proceed without your consent. But we don't want to. We would prefer to have you on our team. And I paused for a little effect, and I said, well, I don't doubt, but what, in a medical emergency, you probably could go ahead and you could operate, Doc, but you know there could be some adverse consequences from this operation. And here's the way I see it. I want you to be 100% responsible for any adverse side effects that may come from the operation. So I said, let me reiterate, you do not have my permission to cut her open. Now, if you think you need to cut her open, and if you think this is a medical emergency, and if you think that you want to take on that kind of responsibility, get after it. But if there are any problems that derive from this operation, you may rest assured that litigation will surely follow. So, you know, I'm kind of a plain-spoken old boy, and I just told him where the bear does it. And there was a miracle, I tell you, boys and girls. You won't believe this. They decided that they didn't need to operate, and they didn't. And she had that baby naturally, a little early, but naturally, and without any cutting, burning, and poisoning, and everything turned out real fine, and I was real happy with it. Now, I'm not here to tell you you shouldn't have a cesarean, but I'm here to tell you that if you've got one-third of the pregnancies in America being done by, or the births being done by a cesarean section, there's something wrong there. It either is that one-third of the women of America have become so weak and degenerate that they can no longer have babies, which doesn't say much for evolution, does it? Or we've got a lot of doctors out here selling a lot of unneeded operations for profit and gain, one or the other. Now, there's probably a little bit of both going on there. I'll let you decide what you think it is. But going back here to this gallbladder thing over here again, I'm just talking about gallbladders over here. You know, as always, I strongly recommend that people who are considering the surgery look at naturopathic options, because removing a functional organ from your digestive tract is never a health-enhancing situation. It's not a health-enhancing solution. It's just something that's too easy for conventional medicine to do. And they do hundreds of thousands of these surgeries every year. And they don't consider it a very big deal, so the patients don't think that it's a very big deal either. Now, just because the doctor can remove your gallbladder, does that mean that we ought to do it? Just because the doctor can remove the baby by C-section, does that mean that we ought to do that? Just because we can remove your tonsils, adenoids, and appendix, does that mean that we should? Just because you can remove the back seat from your car, the trunk lid, and the hood, and the headlights, and the taillights, does that mean that we should? Because it's going to impair the operation of your automobile, it's going to impair the operation of your body. And in the case of your body, it's going to be for life. Now, once in a while, they'll talk about, you know, we'll give you an organ transplant. You know, I'm not here to second guess the medical profession. You know, it may be that you need to have your diseased kidney removed. It may be that you need to have your gallbladder removed. It may be that you need to have your appendix removed. It could be that. But don't you think you ought to have a second or third opinion? Now, I'm an old-timey general contractor. Now, if I come knocked on your door and said, I want to remodel your kitchen, would you say, oh, Mr. Gordon, come right on in? And you just go ahead and remodel the kitchen, and when you get through, you just send me a bill, and I'll write you a check. Now, would you do that? Now, in all probability, you wouldn't, and if you did, you'd have to have your head up the wrong end. Well, why in the hell would you do that with a doctor if you wouldn't do that with a contractor? See, typically, as a contractor, I noticed that my customers would say, okay, well, that's very good, Mr. Gordon. I'm glad to have your written opinion. That's called your bid. And so, let me get a couple, three more bids in here, and let's see what they look like. And so the customer will get two or three bids, and then sometimes he'll get down to. Sometimes I've been hired, and I wasn't the low bidder. And a customer would say, well, I'm going to go with you, Mr. Gordon. You're about 10% higher than the low bidder, but that's competitive. and I liked your experience, and I talked to a couple of your references on here, and they had nothing but the best recommendation for you, and so I'm going to go ahead and go with you. Now, you know, if you're somewhere in the ballpark, just because you're not the low bidder doesn't mean you won't get the job. But the moral of the story is, typically, when you're going to have your kitchen remodeled or bathroom or a room addition or something put on your house, you want two or three opinions. And, you know, common sense would tell you that two or three opinions on a C-section or two or three opinions on a gallbladder operation, you know, might be in order. Now, this guy Schultz now is also a naturopath. He's an herbalist, but he's also a naturopath. And he ran a clinic. He likes to heal with herbs. Other naturopaths use other modalities and other treatments. You know, there isn't just one treatment, you know, for these various and sundry ailments. Now, let me give you the names of these books again so that you can avail yourself of the same information that I'm giving you. This one here called Colon Health by Norman Walker, I think you can probably pick up in a health food store. It's pretty common. It's about 100 pages in round numbers. Let me just take a look here. Yeah, 122 pages. And he advocates colonic irrigations. That's an enema with a machine, and typically it's done by the naturopath or the colonic irrigation therapist in his office, in his clinic. The second guy over here is Tissue Cleansing Through Bowel Management. That's another book. This guy Jensen, he's dead now, Bernard Jensen, DC and nutritionist. He was a pretty good old boy, and remember that Schultz trained under both of these guys. And I'll tell you, this book, Tissue Cleansing Through Bowel Management, is dynamite. He's got pictures in here of people that have the most god-awful sores on their bodies. I'm looking on page 144, and I'm telling you, this is a gag of maggot. And what they did was they put this guy on bowel cleansing, and when they got his bowel cleaned out, all of these ugly sores on his feet went away. He was so plugged up that his body was excreting these toxins through his skin, causing these big sores. And that book is called Tissue Cleansing Through Bowel Management. Dynamite book. Now, I'm not reviewing that book, per se, so I might do that someday, but that's not what's on the agenda today. And the one that is Cleanse and Heal Your Body, and that's Dr. Schultz. And you can get a copy of his book by just calling 1-877-TEACH-ME. That's 1-877-TEACH-ME. Or if you need the number, it's 1-877-832-2463. That's 1-877-832-2463. The book is Cleanse and Heal Your Body. It's Dr. Schultz's 5-Day Bowel Detox. All right, that's the story on the appendix and the gallbladder. I'm out of time, so let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal. Our time is up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.